Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to first-time novelist Robert Barkley, author of the really sweet, tender, yet still manly romance tale, If Wishes Were Horses. Stick around, or we'll leave you in the dust.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free download at Stitcher.com. That's Stitcher.com.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of men who cried real crocodile tears after reading If Wishes Were Horses in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Believe it or not, there is a real heart beating beneath Mr. Media's sarcastic, bitter front. How else would a publicist cut through my years of built-up resistance to romance novels and not only convince me to read one, but to actually have its author on the show? Well, that's sort of where we are today. I read Robert Barkley's first novel, If Wishes Were Horses. I'm going to do that again because I just called you horses whores.
If Wishes Were Whores,
that's a whole other book. That could be the sequel.
Book. I can't.
Sorry. All right. Take two. Here we go. Oh, man. I know. Well, that's where we are today. I read Robert Barkley's first novel, If Wishes Were Horses, as a bit of a lark. I admit it. I figured I'd probably push it aside after the first 50 pages. And then it was going to be after the first 100 pages. And yeah, before I knew it, I had read the whole damn thing. Funny thing, this Barkley guy, he doesn't write like a first-timer. Now, If Wishes Were Horses zips along, right along, taking the reader to an oversized ranch outside of Boca Raton, Florida, where we discover lovelorn Wyatt, his overprotective father, Ram, and a woman named Gabby and her teen son, Trevor, who will unintentionally challenge the way Wyatt has lived his life these last 5 years since the accident. Robert Barkley, welcome to Mr. Media.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Glad to have you. Congratulations on the book. It's a fine read.
Thank you very much. I owe it all to my ever-industrious agent, Marley Russoff, and the folks at HarperCollins Morrow, especially my editor, Lucia Macro, for... Thankfully, seeing something in this book.
I'm sure you get asked this a lot, especially as a first-time author. How did you go from being a guy who wanted to write a book to a guy who's published a book and hold it up? I mean, published very well. It's a HarperCollins. It's a nice-looking book. It's well-published. How did that happen for you?
I had businesses in upstate New York, and I moved to Florida. I sold them, moved to Florida, and I had time on my hands. And my wife, Joyce, said to me, well, you know, big shot, you always wanted to write a book. Why don't you sit down and write a book? So I was searching around for what I thought would be a good premise, because in these economic times, I think the first thing you really need is a very interesting, I hate to use the word offbeat, but a very interesting, unique premise. Mm-hmm. I had owned horses when I was a youngster in New York State, and my father and I also owned racehorses that we ran at Vernon Downs in New York. So I knew about horses. And I had also learned a little bit about equine therapy. So I did some research. I spoke to folks on the ranches who actually run such programs. And it occurred to me that the equine therapy program might be an interesting nugget around which to wind a love story. And I wanted it to be about forgiveness and some redemption. And it just sort of evolved from there. Any advice that I could give a first-time writer would be, first of all, make the book as good as you know how to make it. And then secondly, try and find the best agent possible. Hmm. Normally, unless a book has been vetted by an agent and sent to a publisher, normally publishing houses look askance at manuscripts that haven't been sent to them by agents. And that's too bad, because I'm sure there's some very good work in there. But they just simply don't have the time. Hmm. So a good agent is key. And my agent sold it to Harper, and we went on from there.
Not a lot of men, I think, writing romance novels.
I'm not sure I would call this a romance novel. I'm not that familiar with the genre. When I think of a romance novel per se, I think of the romance section,
right,
the Fabio-esque, you know, covers and so on. I prefer to think this really is a contemporary mainstream love story. There are a couple other guys doing that kind of course. Nicholas Sparks does that kind of thing. Robert Evans has done that kind of thing. But I think in general, you're right. I don't think there are a lot of men who have tried to tackle this particular genre. For me, it wasn't about writing in the genre. It was about telling the story that I wanted to tell and let the story fall into whatever slot anybody wanted to place it.
Hmm. Do you know these people in the book? I mean, are these people that you know in some way?
No, they're all amalgams of Hemingway liked to say that he liked to take a trait from one person and another and another and another and combine them and get somebody new. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what I did with all the characters, with the exception of Ram, the patriarch at the ranch. For those of you who have not read the book, Ram is my father, Harry.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Plucked him right out of real life and put, except Ram has hair, my father does not, and my father, thank heavens, does not have dementia, but they are so close. I wanted a crusty, crotchety old patriarch that sort of dropped little pearls of wisdom, you know, along in the book, and my father is that. He's still with us. He's very, very astute, and talking to my dad can be a little bit like talking to Yogi Berra. Except that I'm not sure Yogi Berra knew what he was saying, but my dad does. He does it to see if you're listening. So that was the attitude I took with Ram.
Now, did your dad know when you were writing the book, before it was published, did he know that you were writing about him?
Well, one day I was sending pages, chapters along to my parents in New York as they were coming out of the printer. And one day my father called up and he says, "So I've been reading your book." And I said, "Yeah." He said, "The old man." Said, "That's me, isn't it?" And I said, "Well, yeah." And he said, "Well, you nailed it." So yes, he caught on.
Very nice, because, I mean, really, the old man in the book, despite having occasional flashes of dementia, is a very wise, a little manipulative, but a very wise guy. He's not, you know, he puts out that kind of gruff exterior, mm-hmm. but he cares about his family. He's very in tune with what's going on around him. Not a bad portrait to paint of one's father, if it fits.
When I was writing Ram, my internal image of Ram was Sam Elliott.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and that helped, you know, as I was writing.
So are you Wyatt?
No.
No, he's shaking that off, folks. He said, no, that's not me.
That's a lot smarter and has a lot more money than I do.
Got it. Who is Wyatt?
Wyatt's kind of a guy I'd like to be.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of lives by his own rules. They're also lawyers by trade, but he gets to live on the ranch and sort of do what he wants to do, aside from the tragedy that he suffered, of course.
Mm-hmm. And I got to ask you, if Gabby were to be played in the movies, who would play Gabby?
Although she might be a little mature for the role, I was kind of thinking Diane Lane.
Oh. I hate to break this to you, but Diane Lane was cast a week ago as Superman's mother in the new Superman movie.
Well, there you go.
I think you got to rethink that one.
I think if I was going to cast Wyatt, I think Hugh Jackman would be good.
Ah,
as Wyatt.
Nice.
That would be a nice fit there, I think.
Okay.
One of the characters I most enjoyed inventing was the son, Trevor, with his James Dean image going on. That was a lot of fun too.
Couldn't find anyone more recent than James Dean for him to emulate, though.
Didn't want to.
Yeah.
I wanted to make him unique. I didn't want to make him somebody who was into iPhones and baggy shorts and texting. This kid has had his problems, and he's sort of lived in his own mind. since the death of his father. And I wanted to draw back on some of those older, and I think cooler images of teenage problems. And that's why I saddled him with that persona.
Interesting.
No pun intended.
No. And I'm sorry, I just went blank. Is it Aunt Lou, the cook?
Yes.
Aunt Lou. What about her? How do you see her?
I see her as the sort of she really sort of runs the house.
Right.
You know, Ram runs the ranch, but Lou really runs the house. I think Ram just thinks he runs the house. I envision Lou as actually being the one who pays the bills, you know. And in any business, the owner thinks he's God, but believe me, the office manager is God.
Yeah.
And I see Lou as the one who does, she kind of does the dirty work and the sort of the things that are necessary, and she's not above sticking her two cents in either.
Mm-hmm. Now, can we give away, you mentioned the accident, can we give just a little bit of an idea to people before we break?
Sure.
What the basic plot is without giving anything?
I always give folks, I think it's probably fair to give them no more than they can read on the fly leaf of the book. I invented a quarter horse ranch outside of Boca Raton. It's run by an old patriarch named Ram Blaine, who's 77 years old, who is in love with all things cowboy to the point that he named his two sons Wyatt and Morgan, and his two golden retrievers Butch and Sundance. And they breed and raise and train quarter horses, and they're very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Some of their money is old money from previous descendants, but they're quite well-to-do. And his youngest son, Wyatt, is an attorney also, who also works on the ranch. And Wyatt's wife was a psychologist who ran equine therapy programs at the ranch because she thought it was a good fit. And 5 years before the book really gets started, Wyatt loses his wife and son to a drunk driver, and he cannot get going. He can't find anyone to love. He has a problem dating women. He's really stuck. So in an attempt to find some closure, he decides to run one more of these therapy programs in his wife's name at the ranch, and everything's going along well. He's going to do it for free, and he has about 30 kids lined up, and then 1 week before the program starts, the widow of the man who killed his family comes to him and begs him to enroll her son, which creates a lot of tension and a lot of interesting things that I could do with that.
A lot of good stuff. Good book to read. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with novelist Robert Barkley, whose new book is If Wishes Were Horses. And read this book. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Williams. There's so many things kids have to be good at these days. It's hard to stop and think about how something like learning music can help them in the future. Music helps kids because it's a performing art, and children need to learn to perform well so they can succeed in society. Getting an 85% on a math test is pretty good, but hitting 85% of the right notes during a concert isn't good enough for most music students or their teachers. A special kind of practice and preparation goes into the discipline of performing music, and it helps kids develop habits that will allow them to perform better in all areas of their lives. A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
Pepsi Cola, it's the fastest, 12 ounces, that's a lot, twice as much for a nickel, too. Pepsi Cola is a drink for you. Nickel, 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 nickel.
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with novelist Robert Barkley, whose new book is If Wishes Were Horses. Rob, how much time passed from the point that your wife, I guess, said, challenged you to go ahead and write that book you've always wanted to write, to the time you were finished? How long did it actually take to write the book?
Well, I wasn't under contract, so I had no deadline. Mm-hmm. So I worked on it as I felt like working on it. I would say it took about a year.
And how much rewriting, once you did have a contract, was there? And what surprised you when you got into the process with an editor?
Well, first of all, my agent recommended a few changes, which I incorporated. And then my editor at HarperCollins, Morrow, recommended a few more changes. We ended up adding about 5 chapters to the book that weren't there.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
At what point in the book were the additions?
One of the concerns was that Wyatt and Gabby got together too easily, and they needed to have a couple of spats along the way, which I invented and put into the book. The other one was that after the incident with the horse, Sadie,
mm-hmm.
They felt that Trevor would have been far more angry at Ram than what I initially indicated in the book. So they wanted a couple more chapters showing Trevor's anger and his pulling away from Ram for a time. Those were the two largest things. But they didn't have to tear the book apart. They weren't about moving chapters around or doing rewrites or fundamentally changing things on that kind of a basis. The book was fairly solid, I think, when they got it.
It sounds like you got very good advice, because the two points that you talk about there, when they first get together after the spats, one of the best scenes in the book, I thought, was actually when he suddenly shows up at her apartment.
I had fun writing that one.
Yeah, yeah. What was it that her T-shirt says?
A day without sex is like a day without sunshine.
Yeah, yeah.
And she pulls it on by accident and doesn't know, and then there's Wyatt standing at the door. And I tried to write that one from a female point of view. I thought, she's not expecting him to come, so, you know, how can we embarrass her just a little bit and make it a little bit comic? That was a fun chapter to write.
People who may read that and think, oh, come on, nobody puts on a T-shirt like that by accident. You know what you're doing in the morning. I have my own very quick story. I'll tell you this. I work as a journalist, and 4 or 5 years ago, I went to New York to interview the new owner of the Tampa Bay Rays. I had packed. It was winter, and normally I wouldn't pack T-shirts. I live in Florida. I wouldn't pack T-shirts to wear under a dress shirt, but it's cold up there, and I wanted to be warm. So I had just reached into the drawer and I grabbed some T-shirts and put them in. And I know we're off topic here, but you'll see the connection. So I get to New York, and I get dressed, and I pull on a T-shirt. First one I pull out. Well, it's not a white, plain white T-shirt like you would normally wear under a dress shirt. It's a white T-shirt that has a Rays logo on it. Pure coincidence that this is the day I'm going to meet the owner of the team. So after I met with him, I was supposed to go and talk to a guy who was going to hire me to do a book, my own book, with him, a bank president. And so I'm with the owner of the Rays, and I'm telling him the story. I said, I know this sounds silly, but I'm actually wearing a Rays shirt underneath here. And he sees it, and he laughs. Now, he knows I'm going next to meet with the bank president, and he doesn't want me to wear this T-shirt in there because he thinks it'll be unprofessional if the guy can see it. So he actually literally offered to trade me T-shirts. And I didn't do that, but I thought, you know, it was a great story. But it says to me, I read that part where she put on a shirt, didn't think about what it was, and was embarrassed by it. I get that completely. I completely understand that happening.
You have to be careful about what you put in the book and what you don't regarding believability. I've been lucky enough to be given a second contract by HarperCollins Morrow, and I just finished that book 10 days ago.
Oh, congratulations.
And in it, not to digress, but in it, the male lead character owns an English setter who can actually go to the refrigerator and bring him back a beer. And it's true. If you go on YouTube and look it up, there's a way to you tie a towel to the refrigerator handle, and you can actually, provided you put a beer cozy on the bottle, you can actually train your dog to pull the door open and bring you a beer and shut the door. And we're going to see how the editor reacts.
Hey, have you seen the video? There's a video, I think, of a lab or something that dances up on its hind legs for like a 3-minute
Yeah, he was. I think it was on Letterman's Stupid Pet Tricks too.
It's incredible. But I think that dog and the guy who trained him. I think I went to college with them at University of Miami. Sounds like one of the guys I was a freshman with many, many years ago.
Gives a whole new meaning to the phrase "man's best friend."
Oh, absolutely. So listen, I'm thinking that if I were single again, and hopefully that'll never happen, but just in case, you know, you got to keep your options open there. But I was thinking maybe I should try my hand at, a modern romance novel, because I figure that these romance conferences and romance conventions of authors and fans have got to be packed with lovelorn, very sincere ladies. So what do you think? Have you had enough of that you would think that, yeah, that'd be a good place to be single and a guy?
I think it'd be a very good place to be a single guy, especially if you're a successful novelist. I am, however, very happily married. As a matter of fact, I'm doing an appearance next week in Naples called Bagels and Books, which is a collection of book clubs from the Naples area, and that will be largely a female audience. Yeah.
Yeah, you must just really hate making those appearances, huh?
Not too shabby.
No.
Especially when they're paying your way and giving you an honorarium. So, you know, yeah, no, I'm more than happy to go wherever they send me. I'm at their service.
Now, to go back a second, does the second book have a working title?
The second book is titled, tentative title is More Than Words Can Say. And I'm very, very, I'm especially happy with this book.
Mm. Now, are we ever going to see Wyatt and Gabby in another book?
Nothing would please me more than to write a sequel to Wishes Were Horses. I've given it a little bit of thought. I think it would be fun to put it about 5 years later. Trevor is now maybe 19, 20 years old, and make it a little more Trevor's story. Perhaps Gabby has an unscrupulous brother or cousin or something that comes in and sort of tries to drive a wedge into the ranch. I don't know, you know. This was a book that I wanted to make a little like the old show Dallas, but not too much like Dallas, you know. But nothing would please me more than to write a sequel to Wishes. I would really enjoy that. Plus, it would be kind of easy because so much of the work is already done. Mm-hmm. The characters are formed, the stage is set.
Right,
you know,
right.
What you need would be a plot, and I could take off from there.
Well, and I know I got to the end of the story, and I wanted to know what was going to happen to them next. I mean, you do talk a little bit about, you know, what happens a couple years later. I won't go into that, but, you know, so we know a little bit of something. But yeah, it would be nice to follow them a little more. And
But right now, I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is that normally working authors very often are walking around with three books inside their heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to carry Wishes Were Horses inside my head for interviews like this. Then we will soon be in the process of editing More Than Words Can Say, and I'm also trying to think up new things for another, you know, the next book, hopefully that I'll have the chance to sit down and write. So you have to be able to compartmentalize.
Has the writing now become your life, a business interest aside, or?
It's my full-time occupation for as long as they'll have me. Yeah.
Hmm. Nice work if you can get it.
Nice work if you can get it. I enjoy it very much. I enjoy it very much. But, you know, it's like anything else in the entertainment industry. And Mick Jagger said it best, I think, in an interview that he gave. He said, your next work always has to be better than your last one, and that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're yesterday's newspaper. And it's like being an actor in a way. You have a contract and you fulfill it, but then you're always hoping to get another one. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I read Keith Richards' biography just recently.
Did you?
And yeah, it was fascinating. Great, great, great book. I mean, he kind of talks about how directly or indirectly they have their whole careers to do their first album, and then if it's a hit, you basically got to turn around and be a hit again and again and again.
That's exactly right.
You never have your whole lifetime to do that first one. After that, it becomes, that's your job. That's what you're expected to do.
Sure, sure. But I enjoy it. I love the work.
So we talked about that your wife challenged you to write the book at one point. We know that your dad figured out that he was Ram. Have your friends made the adjustment from you being a business guy to being a novelist? Do they treat you any differently? Do they talk to you about different things than they used to?
No. They're begging me for pages that come out of the printer on stuff that hasn't hit the bookshelves yet. You know, they feel privileged in that regard. One of the questions I was asked in one of my previous interviews regarding this book was, when did you realize you were famous? And that one just made me shake my head, because I don't consider myself to be famous. If you think about it, few authors really are household words. Dan Brown, Stephen King, you know, there aren't many. And to prove the point, if you walk down through the shelves of a bookstore and you walk down between two rows and you look from left to right at the different authors' names, you're not going to find that many with whom you're familiar, although they may do very well in their chosen field. But it's very difficult to break in. I think it's even more difficult to become, you know, a major influence, but only time will tell.
I tell that to people that I write books with all the time, that if you want some sense of how competitive it is, just go to the bookstore and look around. I mean, there's just a ton of books.
But, well, just getting an agent is incredibly difficult. I was lucky to get one of the top agents in the country because she fell in love with the story. And we had breakfast in New York not long ago, and I said to her, I don't think she'll mind me telling this, because I did not know the answer. I said, Marley, out of every 1,000 or so manuscripts that come to your firm, you know, newbies, how many would you choose to represent? And she said, one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't know those odds going in, or I might never have attempted it. It just goes to show what you can do when you don't know any better, I guess.
Well, Rob, next time somebody asks you, when did you know you were famous, here's what you'll answer. It was the day that I was interviewed on Mr. Media.
Okay. I'll do that.
All right.
Be happy to do that.
All right. Now, folks, listen, you can order If Wishes Were Horses by first-time novelist Robert Barkley from great bookstores everywhere, or you can get it online right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. Rob, can you be found online? Are you doing Twitter, Facebook? Do you have a website? Where can you find you?
Right now, I can be found best on the HarperCollins website. There are a number of pages there regarding my bio, question and answer sessions, that sort of thing. That's the best place to look for me right now.
Okay. And, well, listen, Robert Barkley, I really enjoyed the book. I am not ashamed to say it. It's a real good story, and thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate your interest in my book.
My pleasure, my pleasure. And, folks, for more original interviews with your favorite American novelists, surf over to our main website, mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen, especially when you're in Boca Raton, with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media, shoot me an email directly at bob@mrmedia.com, and you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you giving up a little piece of your day and spending it with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening. See you next time, everybody. Bye, Rob.
Bye. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Hi, this is Raquel Welch. Yes, that Raquel. And I'd rather stick needles in my ears and listen to one more minute of Mr. Media Radio.